Yes. Thanks, team. So like Johnny said, I'm going to take the next part of this meeting, give a talk, make a speech, and then we'll have some time for you to add some of what you're working with, your questions or maybe your anecdotes or insights. Advent is a really great opportunity to get refreshed in how you're thinking about and receiving from God. Now, for some people, we've celebrated Advent a long time in some varying traditions. For a lot of people, though, each year, as part of Circle of Hope, there are folks who have not participated in Advent before. And it's just kind of a word that like religious people use to swap out for Christmas or something like that, or it seems like some kind of more fancy church celebration. So as you're working with that, I hope that what it really becomes is just that opportunity that you take to receive God's gift to you in the person of Jesus in a new way. But the season is kind of building up. It's for anticipation, it's for preparation, and then finally celebration. This week, like I said earlier, we're going to look at John the Baptist and how he's leading us to living wild and spiting fear. Like we talked about last week, we're surrounded by fear. We're all working with fear in some different ways. And we kind of respond differently to fear. And if sometimes it's like a fear, like you signed up with your buddies to go skydiving. You thought this was a really great idea until you got by the door. And then you're afraid to take the next step. You know, I think that's kind of legitimate. Kind of fear that we might be talking about, but a lot more often I think it's about relationships, how it's going or how's it's gonna go. It's about the future and anxiety about what might happen or might not happen, what you wish would happen. It's being afraid about what people might think, fear of the unknown, fear in terms of where the whole world is going, fear about the not only that the world is going in a backwards way, but that you don't have any agency to do anything about it. Here's something that I hope we can all agree on, but I want to make the statement first and then check it out with you. But that there are forces and powers and people in the world, some of them you know personally, some of them not, that wish to keep you boxed in with fear. There are forces out there that keep you afraid on purpose and prefer it that way so that you can be either exploited, taken advantage of, or stay on the sidelines when there's opportunities to do something in our time and place that require overcoming that fear. Do you agree with that? I mean, do you have a sense? I mean, now it's kind of hard to disagree, right? Because now you're going to be the one saying, actually, no, I think that no one I know wants me to be afraid, or there are no perpetual preemptive wars in my name, you know, given the fact that I am afraid of, like, if it doesn't happen, something even worse will happen. You know, after that, I agree with you that after that little paragraph, it's kind of hard to disagree, you know. That being said, John the Baptist lived in a climate of fear, too. So when we get into his life, you're going to have to use your imagination a bit because it was different. The Roman military machine dominated the landscape. For most of us, we live here in North America, and the United States would be something a lot more easy to liken to Rome rather than first century, you know, say the Jewish people. They were dominated by a foreign military power. For us, that's hard to imagine unless you really imagine yourself in like a different kind of nation or kingdom where the military machine is dominating you. And if you do that, then I think you're pretty cool. But most of the time, what we're more used to is being sort of connected to and benefiting from, although not quite part of, this exporting domination that does economic gain, political control, and of course, through wars to the rest of the world. So even if you think about the Middle East right now, and now there's a bunch of U.S. troops are going to be pulling out of Iraq, and not necessarily. I've heard about the U.S. forces, but I haven't necessarily heard about all the contractors that the United States more under the radar supplies, like the organization formerly known as Blackwater and that kind of stuff. I don't know about that yet. But anyway, as they're moving out, that kind of is like a big day for Iraqis, particularly to imagine what it's like to be not so directly dominated by a military presence from another place. Am I making sense yet? So for us, it's hard to imagine what that's like to be in there because we're normally on the other side of that. For John the Baptist, that is everyday life. For he and his peers or his family, they had not probably lived a day that they weren't reminded that the military power of Rome was here. That they were reminded every single day that the Roman superiority existed. And with this, you know, sort of psychological defeat came some benefits. And that's, I think, how people tolerate such domination. Because with Rome came new technologies, such as roads. Not that bad, you know? The different kinds of irrigation and aqueduct technology, it's nice to have water. You know, and those sorts of things came with it. And then, of course, it came at a cross. Came with a cost. The Roman way or Roman peace that came through provided these benefits, but at the great cost of that psychological trauma that you experience as being reminded that, yeah, Rome's here. They can go in your house. They can take your stuff. They can do all kinds of stuff to you because you're kind of a non-person as compared to the Roman citizens who are actual people. And then they're all tied up with the delusions of the deity of their, you know, commander in chief and everything else. But well, that's for another day. However, the domination of that is where John the Baptist lived. The fear that that caused, that something totally bizarre and irrationally dangerous can happen to you any day of the week, is where they lived. So John's fellow Jews, in many ways, are tightly knit, because when you live under that kind of military might, you find yourselves knitting each other, being knit together in some different ways. But at the same time, there are rival groups that were competing for what you might call the scraps off the Roman's table. So they're lobbying or maneuvering for political power, or you could just say that they're trying to keep the nation of Israel secure and what's left of it to make sure that it survives. John lived in such a way to that spited fear, wildly walking into who he was called to be. Now, the big twist on the story that I'm trying to tell today is that John may not have known who he was. We call him John the Baptist. Everybody pretty much knows who John the Baptist is, even though there were people named John that have baptized people since. But when you say John the Baptist, you know who I'm talking about. That's sort of a weird thing when we get into like who he was, because he was prophesied about. We're going to hear things, angels talking to his father that he will be filled with the Holy Spirit before he's even born, and this kind of wild stuff that's going to make us maybe think of John the Baptist.